If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Day 3 of NFL free agency is here, and the Titans have made 3 signings since our last recording: a defensive tackle, a kicker, and a punter. We're going to cover that. But the big question: what is the Titans' biggest mistake of free agency so far? We're going to dive into that and answer your chat questions. This is the Music City Audible Live. Let's get to it. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible Live, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, the managing editor of your favorite Titans website, Titan Sized, and the publisher for NFL Draft on SI, my co-host, Justin Mello. How's it going, Justin?
Doing well. Like we said, we would consider going live yesterday if the Titans made any signings. Well, they only made 2 yesterday after our show, and they were both pretty low-key. It did not exactly warrant an emergency podcast. We would have checked with Arden Key on if it was good or not, but he's in Indianapolis now. You know, remember Arden Key used to jump in our comments and say whether it was worthy of an emergency pod or not. They were not, but there was another signing this morning, a re-signing, if you will. And we've got 3 deals to talk about.
Yeah, 3, maybe 4, depending on how you view one of these deals that happened just before we started recording. The signings yesterday were late in the afternoon / evening, and you and I were done podcasting for the day. And let's be real, we're not going to hop on and do an emergency podcast for Jordan Elliott or Tommy Townsend, despite the numerous people tagging us on podcasts like... Now, with this one planned for 10 a.m. today, we knew we could hold off and talk about it now. So we are going to cover the biggest mistake Mike Borgonzi has made building this Titans roster today. Although, spoiler alert, that's sort of like a clicky title to get you guys into the show. Now that you're into the show, we'll talk about it, but it's not as extreme maybe as the title paints it to be. Make sure you like this stream, like this video, subscribe to the channel, get in the live chats. Start putting your questions and comments there. And of course, after this stream ends, stay for a minute and leave a real comment below. But Justin, the Titans signed defensive tackle Jordan Elliott, who was with Robert Saleh in San Francisco. They also signed punter Tommy Townsend, bring back kicker Joey Sly, and they have exercised their exclusive rights tender on reserve receiver / special teamer Bryce Oliver. So that's kind of exciting news for the offense. That's the one that just happened. Let's start with Jordan Elliott. Defensive line depth, a guy who has been a starter at different points in his career, coming in to shore up, again, that depth on the defensive line, somebody who knows the expectation in the building when Robert Saleh is in charge. I have no complaints about this signing. It's hard to get worked up about a depth signing, no matter how good or bad they are. So welcome to the Titans, Jordan Elliott.
Yeah, I think it's a depth signing, like you said. It's certainly a rotational one, right? Like, we've talked about Saleh's defense being like a 4-3 base. And obviously the two D tackles who are going to be on the field a lot, hopefully, are Jeffrey Simmons and John Franklin Myers, right? So this guy will kind of be like a Sebastian Joseph Day or a James Lynch. What do you think? He plays 20% of defensive snaps per game, roughly, if I had to guess. I think my biggest takeaway from this, and we already knew this, but when I wrote on the when I wrote the article for it this morning, or I wrote it last night, but published it this morning on Titan Size, it's just the continuation of how much Robert Saleh has his fingerprints over this defensive line revampment, if you will. They've now acquired three linemen in this free agency period. Of course, one of them via trade in Jermaine Johnson, John Franklin Myers, and now Jordan Elliott. All three of them who were coached by Robert Saleh at some point. Jordan Elliott last year with the 49ers, his only year being coached by Robert Saleh, but nonetheless, very notable. If I got to be honest with you, it's probably a downgrade from Sebastian Joseph Day. Like, I don't think he's as good of a player as Sebastian Joseph Day is. He can stop the run a little bit. Not a whole lot of pass rushing production throughout his career. I think he had zero sacks last year, if I'm recalling correctly. I've got more faith in, you know, Joseph Day than I do this guy. But it kind of brings up a point that I think I mentioned at the end of the show yesterday. When you bring in new coaching staff members, sometimes good players get sacrificed in favor of guys they're familiar with. And I think this is kind of what's happening here. Like, I like Jihad Ward. I like Sebastian Joseph Day. I like James Lynch. But it looks like instead, and I'm not painting as a negative or blaming anyone. This is just par for the course when new staffs come in. Sometimes it's even, you know, good players that get sacrificed, especially on the back end of rosters when you're talking rotational types, in favor of guys that these coaches have coached before. In favor of guys that they're familiar with, that know the scheme. I guess those are all the same thing. But that's kind of what happened here, in my opinion, with Jordan Elliott.
Yeah, and Sebastian Joseph Day, as you said, still out there. Not expecting the Titans to bring him back at this point.
Another guy, though, right? Like, they need one more guy there on the interior.
Depends how they feel about those UDFAs that have been left on the roster, former UDFAs, I should say. Lots of guys like random Isaiah Rakes and random guys like that in the room. But yeah, they could use more bodies, could add a rookie there, you know, day three draft pick style or another UDFA. And we're going to get to some of your questions here in the chat. Don't worry, I'm marking them. I'm starring them. So we will get to them. Keep them coming, just because if we don't hit them right now, it doesn't mean we're not going to come back to them. Titans bring in punter Tommy Townsend. Obviously not super happy with Johnny Hecker last year. We heard these rumblings that Johnny Hecker was probably not going to be back. Didn't really live up to, I guess, what Bones Fossil remembered working with Johnny Hecker. Too many touchbacks, not enough net yardage, too many shanked punts. And they bring in Tommy Townsend, who, not a great punter by any means, but above average, above league average in a lot of metrics, like punts down inside the 20, net punting. He had the third longest punt of the season last year with a 70 yarder. So he's got a big leg, can flip the field when needed, and pretty good at actually being accurate with those punts, which was an issue for the Titans last year. So Tommy Townsend, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about a punter, but special teams do matter. And the Titans have one of the better special teams groupings in the league when you look at kicker, punter, long snapper, and obviously the all-pro returner.
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, Tommy Townsend was better than Johnny Hecker last year in every meaningful category. Net average, punting, you know, yards per punt, less touchbacks, more punts within the 20. it feels like an upgrade. And I think, again, not a lot of takeaways on this, but two things. One that I found funny, I thought this ended their run of adding free agents they were familiar with. But it turns out, I forgot that Mike Borgonzi was with him in Kansas City a couple of years ago. So 11 new free agents added this offseason. I believe 10 of them have connections to either head coach, GM, or I guess assistant GM in the Elante Taylor case, right? Cordell Volson is the only one, I believe, that did not have a connection to one of them. So pretty freaking funny that Tommy Townsend did have the connection. Better than Johnny Hecker in every category last year. My other only takeaway is credit Bones, because I think he had a big role in bringing Hecker here last year, and he probably played a big role in this decision too. I think they give him that respect when you're, good of a special teams coach as he is. Credit him for not just sticking with loyalty with the guy that he liked and knows. Hecker was disappointing last year. They've seemingly upgraded by bringing in Tommy Townsend.
Yeah, it's a two-year deal for Townsend, so he'll be the Titans punter presumably for the next 2 years. Who knows what happens beyond that? And the kicker, the Titans have re-signed. I think this happened this morning. All the hours and days and months blend together, Justin, when you're just constantly covering a stream of news.
Derek missed it this morning.
Yes, the Titans bring back Joey Sly on, a one-year deal?
Yes.
So Joey Sly will kick again for the Titans. Big leg. We like it. He has a big leg, can hit those bombs from 60 plus. Not every time. He's not Brandon Aubrey, but can hit those kicks, those deeper kicks. Not the most accurate guy, but good enough. I think, 28 of 35 last year, and most of those misses outside of 50 yards. A couple outside of 40 that you think you should make, but not always. They don't always go through, and that's sort of the rub with Joey Sly, is that he does give you that bigger leg than, say, a Nick Folk, who is back in the NFL again for another season.
Two-year deal, I think he signed, Nick Folk.
So bigger leg, but maybe less consistency from shorter range. You hope you're kicking less field goals in general, because you got Brian Daboll coordinating an offense with Cam Ward, throwing to Wandale Robinson and Daniel Bellinger, handing it off to Jeremiah Love. Wait, we haven't got that far yet. We'll get there. So you hope that there are less field goals, that Cam Ward can finish more drives than Brian Callahan and I guess Mike McCoy's Titans were able to do, but not a hugely impactful signing. We can just check these things off the list. The long snapper, the punter, the kicker, the Titans entered free agency with nobody at any of those three spots. They quickly solved those issues, and they have their trio of specialists, along with, again, Shimmeray DK as the punt returner, kick returner, all pro return. Any thoughts on Sly? I mean, you have a couple, and then we can get to Bryce Oliver and the big mistake. Go ahead, sir.
Really going to make a joke that, remember, you were so worried they didn't have any specialists under contract. All of it is taken care of. Sly, Cox, and Townsend will be the special teamers, or the special team, kicker, punter, long snapper next season. No surprise. I do think, I don't want to say they should have definitely upgraded on Sly, but I do think that there's a risk that underrated chance that maybe they have to make a midseason change next year. His accuracy does concern me, and if he gets into a sort of a bad run of form, I would say it's within the realm of possibility that they have to make a change.
Well, it's a one-year deal, so they obviously don't see him as like the long-term answer, and I think that this is, as a team builder, if I was building a team and I needed like star power and just upgrades across the roster, I would not focus a ton of resources on a young kicker. I would make sure the rest of my roster is set, which that's what this season is for. And then next year, when you are feeling better, maybe not even next year, but when you're feeling better about your roster, especially your depth and your young players, then maybe you go out and you find a seventh round kicker or a UDFA kicker you bring in and say, can this guy be our Kyahmi Fairbairn, Houston Texans kicker, signed there as a UDFA, and yesterday signed the largest kicker contract in NFL history. So hopefully the Titans can do something like that. Iron Grids with a nice comment here. I imagine culture building is the biggest reason they want familiarity. All these guys seem to be high character and or have that dog in them. I 100% agree with this. It's sort of the point I was making yesterday about how the Titans want to be a draft and develop team, but obviously, as you pointed out, they have to sign guys. It's like you can't just draft 25 guys and then say we're better now. And they also are signing guys that the coaching staff, various members of the coaching staff, have drafted and developed already. So they're all, it's all part of that culture movement. And you saw the Patriots do this last year, Justin, with Mike Vrabel. And part of their turnaround, obviously part of their turnaround was having a young second-year quarterback in Drake May get coached up by a fantastic, one of the best in the league offensive coordinators in Josh McDaniel and really take that next step. The other part of it was the Patriots had a super soft schedule. I mean, that we can't ignore that that's part of their turnaround. But the third part was Mike Vrabel bringing in a bunch of his guys, guys that understood what he wants. Like when he walks in the room for a team meeting, guys that are going to be able to tell, like Harold Landry and Robert Spillane and all these guys that have played for Vrabel before, being able to tell their teammates like, hey, Vrabel's going to call on you randomly. Like that first team meeting where these guys have never played for Vrabel, don't know how he operates. These other guys in the room are going to give them a heads up. The same thing can happen here. All the guys who played for Saleh can instruct the everybody what a team meeting led by Saleh is like if they missed Hard Knocks with the New York Jets. And all the guys that have played for Brian Daboll when the offense meetings are coming around, all those guys like Wandale Robinson and Austin Schlottman and all these guys that have played Daniel Bellinger for Brian Daboll, even Mitch Trubisky, can say this is what the room is like when Brian Daboll's leading the offensive meetings. And I think that like just knowing what the expectation from your coaching staff is and being able to share that with all your teammates as you come into a new building is a huge accelerator in the rebuilding process. So I think that this is a smart way to build a team. If you're going to sign this many guys and spend this much money in free agency, which is typically not the smartest way to build a team, these are the types of guys you want to do that with.
Yeah, one thing I don't have a ton to add there. Like I said, 11 new signings, I believe it is, 10 of them who have been with either the head coach, the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, the GM, or the assistant GM in recent years. 11 new additions. If all of them make the 53-man roster, that's already what? Not a math guy. 20-ish percent roster turnover, give or take. Like, and then you haven't even factored in the draft class yet. They're going to sign a couple more players, not just now, but they might sign guys in July and August that make the roster. Mm-hmm. UDFAs, they are headed for a significant amount of turnover on the 53, as they should, 3-14 in back-to-back years. You don't want to run it back. But I do think it's pretty funny. Like 11 already is probably, I haven't looked this up, but more additions than any other team has made, I'm sure. Like 11 signings in free agency thus far. The Raiders have done a lot. But they also got Max Crosby back. So that's just a little joke. 11 new signings in free agency. So significant turnover coming for this 53-man roster.
All right, we are going to take a quick break for the audio audience here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the biggest mistake Mike Borgonzi has made and how big of a mistake is it? Can the Titans overcome this massive, massive error? I mean, just like brutally terrible decision-making here. I'm playing this up, obviously. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the audio audience, Justin. The big mistake the Titans made. I think there's like one massive mistake and one semi-large mistake. And obviously there's time left in free agency. The free agency is not over. There are still signings to be made and the Titans still have money. It's not clear exactly how much money. Spotrac right now is saying $48 million. That can't be right though, because still missing some big deals. Like John Franklin Myers is not in here. None of the guys like last night and this morning that they signed are not in here yet. Mitch Trubisky, who is not going to be a huge cap hit, but could be in the $5 to $7 million range for the cap hit. It's not insignificant, not in here yet. So Titans probably closer to like $25 million in cap space. Obviously they have guys they can still release. But the big mistake is the way that they have treated, I'm not going to say ignored, because they have signed two guys, but the way they have treated the interior of the offensive line, where they have two big holes at starting positions, including center, which is hugely important for your young quarterback, and right guard, where Kevin Zeitler awaits a decision from himself and from the Titans. Paul Kaharsky reporting that both of them are weighing their options for the 2026 season, both Kevin Zeitler weighing his options and the Titans as an organization weighing their options. Just sign Kevin Zeitler. What are we doing here, Justin? Just sign the guy.
Yeah, I think the big mistake was, or so far, was made at center, right? And some people have complained about cutting Lloyd Cushenberry, and I think there are two sides to it. I'm not saying it definitely wasn't a mistake, but the people who are saying it was, I do think, are ignoring the fact that he underwent off-season surgery on his shoulder. Like, we didn't know that at the time until they cut him. Like, we only found that out when they cut him, because they cut him with a failed physical designation and talked about the off-season shoulder surgery. I wonder if they were just like, man, this guy might be cooked. You know, like, coming off the Achilles, we had hope. Wasn't a great first year. Okay, might get better in the second year. That's, you know, common for Achilles. But now he's undergone shoulder surgery. It's going to set him even further back. It doesn't matter what the alternatives are. Like, we'll get there when we get there. It's not this guy anymore, right? Like, I think that's very much within the realm of possibility. But you look at what happened at center. They were probably hoping to go after Connor McGovern. The Bills make the late decision to re-sign him.
Yep.
Can't control that. But you've got to be prepared. You know, that's also within the realm of possibility. I don't know how prepared they were. Maybe they were going to get in the Tyler Linderbaum sweepstakes, but not at $27 million a year. I reiterate, $9 million more per year than the previous highest paid center, right? I think Creed Humphrey it was at
33%, or I mean, it depends how you view it. 50% more. I mean, half of 18 million is 9 million. He got 150% of what the previous high was. That's crazy.
Wild overpay. And listen, hats off to the Raiders. If there's a time to afford to do it, it's when you're drafting a number one overall rookie quarterback and you're trying to maximize a top 10 pick at running back that you failed to do so the previous year. I get it from the Raiders' perspective, but I also get it from everyone else's perspective who said, he's yours, we can't compete with that offer. It's basically fully guaranteed, too. They pretty much guaranteed all $81 million. So you're tight. I think the one maybe more mistake I would point to is I would have done the Cade Mays deal. Whatever Cade Mays got, I'm forgetting now in truth, but I remember looking it up and remember thinking it was very reasonable as Graver goes to look it up. I would have done the Cade Mays deal.
3 years, $25 million.
Yeah, I mean, $8.5 million a year, whatever it is, $8.3 million a year, I guess it works out to $8.333 million. I would have done the Cade Mays deal. I think he's a better option than what they have. I don't think he's a home run option, but I do think he's better than what they have. It seems that we're heading for Austin Schlottman versus Jackson Slater camp battle. Some of you have talked about like a mid-round pick entering the fray. I can see them drafting one in the, you know, in the third or fourth round. I wouldn't do it in the second round, the third or fourth round, but I don't think, like, I think it's unlikely that that guy definitely beats, you know, definitely beats Austin Schlottman or Jackson Slater to start the year. He might be their eventual plan, but I don't think it's a week one guy. If it's a third or fourth round pick, it's probably going to be Austin Schlottman or Jackson Slater. I love Jackson Slater. You know, I did coming out of Sac State. I said this many times last year. I got this, spoiler alert, from Jackson Slater and from NFL scouts I spoke with. Like, he didn't play center in college, but a lot of scouts felt that that was going to be his best position in the NFL. And I got that from scouts, and then I spoke to Slater, who was honest with me and told me he also heard that from scouts. A lot of them think I can play center. When he got to Tennessee, I could be misremembering. I don't think they did a lot of cross training with him at center initially, because they had Corey Levin there and they wanted him to back up Kevin Zeitler at right guard. So he spent most of his time, if not all of it, preparing at right guard. I spoke to Jackson Slater at some point. I'm just going to check real quick if you guys don't mind, because I don't think you'll mind, because I think I might still have a text message from him.
I seem to remember him being cross-trained all across the offensive line. I do remember he started at guard, but I feel like he was splitting time at guard and center in training camp as they tried to figure out who was going to replace Lloyd Cushenberry, because remember Lloyd Cushenberry coming off an injury, and Corey Levin took most of the training camp snaps at center. But I do feel like I remember Jackson Slater taking some.
They had another center in camp, though. I don't think he was getting – it was the veteran Sam Mustafa or something like that. Like, they had some veteran center there on the 90-man roster. But, yeah, see, like Atlas said, I'm pretty sure it was mostly guard for Slater. I'm sure he got the occasional rep at center, but I was surprised that they didn't kind of, you know, give him more reps at center in practice and things of that nature. But again, he's got a whole offseason ahead of him now, right? And the pre-draft projections were center. I'm into it for sure, but it's risky. It's very risky. I'll throw it back to you for center, then I'll give my thoughts on guard.
Yeah, I just think that that's exactly the right word, is it's risky. Like, this could totally work out and be perfectly fine, but you're putting a lot on a second-year player and a lot of pressure on Cam Ward to
not... Not only would be perfectly fine, I'm so sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, but it would be, like, ideal. Then you'd have a starting center on a rookie contract, a cheap one, right? Like...
Yeah. I mean, if he pans out and becomes, like, not just, like, playable, but, like, a plus player... Which he totally could. I mean, we loved him as a prospect coming out. So we got to keep that in mind. But I just think it's like, it's one thing if you had a center on the roster last year, he gets hurt, Jackson Slater plays in week five and takes over and like goes down the stretch as your starting center. Like, that's how a day three rookie enters year two with a locked up starting spot, right? Is that down the stretch of their rookie season, they prove that they can do it. Jackson Slater didn't get that opportunity. He played like 30-something snaps in week 18 against backups with backups. And he played well. I mean, he looked fine. But this is like Patrick Mahomes week 18 against the Broncos, or I guess it was week 17 back then, against the Broncos of his rookie year being the only experience he had. And then we all enter the next season, and there's like this buzz out of Kansas City that Mahomes is going to be the starting quarterback, and they love him. But the rest of the NFL world was so skeptical. I remember drafting him in like the 15th round of my fantasy draft that year because nobody knew anything. That's just atypical. It doesn't mean it can't work out, but it's not like you can just say the same thing. I'm having this conversation with people on Twitter about Femi Oladejo every time I tweet out the Titans free agency checklist that I've shared on this show. And I have a starting defensive end on there. I get like, oh, you got Jermaine Johnson and already, and isn't Femi Oladejo? Like, why are we acting like Femi Oladejo doesn't exist? It's like, if you don't earn that starting spot during your rookie season, the team is not going to enter the next training camp and say, you're our starter, go prove us right. No, they're going to say, you got to earn this role. And I think that's why Austin Schlottman is signed, is to be competition for Jackson Slater. And so Jackson Slater could totally win this job and the Titans be in a great position. But I think you put it best earlier. It's a huge risk and it's a lot of pressure to put on a young day three draft pick.
Austin Schlottman, definitely the backup plan, maybe a higher... Maybe a higher ceiling than a Corey Levin. They gave him like $4.5 million per year, which is more than they've paid Corey Levin in recent years. So they obviously think a little high of Austin Schlottman. And I don't think Levin's going to be back at this point, in all honesty. I don't think they'd sign Schlottman and Levin. Feels kind of redundant, right? To bring both in. I'd feel a whole lot better about this whole thing if they bring Kevin Zeitler back. If they bring Zeitler back and shore up the right guard spot, and I'm going to try to get through this quickly, then I think it's perfectly reasonable to have one weak link on the offensive line. And I think it would be personally perfectly reasonable for that weak link to be the center and for that weak link center to be like a veteran journeyman who's played well in flashes in Schlottman, or a high upside rookie in Jackson, or sophomore in Jackson Slater, that if he doesn't earn the job, you feel good about the floor that Austin Schlottman provides. I just don't want that to be next to a question mark at right guard as well. Bring Zeitler back. I might have read Paul Kuharsky's report wrong. I thought it sounded like they were interested in having him back. Balls in his court kind of thing. Like, he's just figuring out what he wants to do.
It said that he's trying to figure out what his best option is for 2026 while the Titans still decide what their best, like the way he reported it was both sides are still weighing options. So maybe it's like some sort of a standoff game where nobody wants to make the first move. It's like when you see somebody across the room and you're into them and they're into you, but you're both too shy to actually go up and talk to each other. Maybe that's what's happening with Zeitler and the Titans. It's like Zeitler's like, did they really like me? And the Titans are like, does he want to be back with us? And they just aren't making the move. Like, go do it.
Go do it. Buy him a drink. Go figure it out. Write your number down on a piece of napkin. There are some alternatives I quickly want to get into. Like Wyatt Teller is still a free agent. Dylan Parham is still a free agent. I know Teron Davenport was reporting that they might sign him and move him to center. That was like Teron mentioned that possibility days ago.
Right.
I wouldn't understand that now. First of all, I don't love it, period, because he's a guard who got two starts at center as a rookie 4 years ago. He's right. been a guard ever since. So for me, if they were to sign Dylan Parham, by the way, why wouldn't he just be the plan at right guard?
Right.
Where you have a hole at his natural position. Why would you move him to his less natural position and then have a hole at right guard? Unless, you know, then Jackson Slater's your starting right guard. I guess you're just shuffling chairs. But it just wouldn't make sense to me. If you go sign a veteran guard and you have a hole at guard, you probably keep that guy at guard. So we shall see. The other thing is I saw someone mention trading for Jackson Powers Johnson. I would be very much in favor in that. The Raiders handled him weirdly last year where he's a guard, but they he is a center, but they moved him to guard. And he like didn't play as well as he had played at center. I would be all over acquiring Jackson Powers Johnson. I don't know what it would cost. But if he's like, you know, a holdover they want to get rid of, it wouldn't cost much at all, I would imagine. I'd be all over it. I'm a huge fan of the player, and I would play him at center, his natural position. And then if you bring back Zeitler, then sorry, you know, Slater waits another year. And you got a great backup right guard in Slater or an ascending one, hopefully, who's still going to get a chance because Zeitler's not going to be here forever. And then you've got a backup center who replaced Corey Levin. Nothing wrong with that, so – that would really shore up this offensive line. I don't think they're going to do anything that aggressive. My guess, if I was a gambling man, it's still they do get Zeitler back, and then it's Schlottman versus Slater at center.
Yeah, and I think that Iron Grids has it here. Zeitler plan A at right guard, and maybe they haven't made a move because they're waiting for this. And then depending on what he does or decide where they decide to go, they could pivot to somebody like a Dylan Parham. Or I'd be down for Wyatt Teller. I mean, he's one of the better guards in the NFL, but that probably costs a lot more. And I don't know how much cap space the Titans have. The other big mistake, though, because that was the big, big, big mistake. There's another mistake. The Titans haven't really done enough, in my opinion, to set themselves up to remove all doubt to draft Jeremiah Love. There's still doubt, right? Because they still have a pretty big hole at one of the two end spots. And you can say, sure, let Femi Oladejo and Jalen Harrell compete and best man wins. And then maybe you're terrible at that spot all season because neither of those guys are good enough. Or maybe they are good enough and we're being too, you know, pessimistic about their chances. But you'd feel a hell of a lot better if a proven veteran was on this roster to start opposite Jermaine Johnson. And if you can't get a proven veteran, a lot of fans are going to say the next best move is to draft a guy at number four overall. And that would be, you know, Reuben Bain or David Bailey. I don't think Arvell Reese will be on the board at number four, but who knows? Those are the obvious options there. That the third is that you do draft Jeremiah Love at four and you back yourself into a pretty small corner with pick 35 and say, no matter what happens, we're taking an edge. That doesn't sound like Mike Borgonzi. Mike Borgonzi doesn't sound like doesn't seem like the type of GM that's going to back himself into a, we need this position at this pick number corner, especially 35 picks into the draft. So we'll see what they decide to do here. There's plenty of guys on the market from like towards the end of their career veterans to guys who didn't really live up to their draft status looking for their second contract. Like there's a ton of options on the market still. Nobody that's really going to make a huge difference, but at least somebody that's like a body, you know, a replacement level body in there that can at least participate in the defense. And maybe that is Femi Oladejo. I mean, maybe Femi deserves a shot to compete for this role. The last game of the season he played last year was what, week five against the Raiders? And it looked like his best game of the year to that point. Is that a sign of progress? Or were the Raiders just really, really bad? Maybe both. But this is the other big mistake is that they've done a lot on the defense. Don't get me wrong. I love the moves on defense. And that's why the episode title here is a little clickbaity because it's like, it's not that big of a mistake. They've been very active, and they've done a lot to shore up this roster. But these are the holes that are remaining. And edge, starting level edge, I think is still one of them.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I'll be honest with you, I wasn't sure that you were going to, and I was going to try to signal it to you somehow, but I think it's a huge hole. You know, all they've done is trade for Jermaine Johnson, who's coming off a really disappointing season, and is, you know, coming off like three sacks. He has an ACL in his past. I do think there are a couple of veterans that are still out there. I don't know that they're, you know, correct me if I'm, like, Cameron Jordan is still available. We've got a lot of shouts about Bradley Chubb. Is it Joey Bosa, I think, is available. Like, all these older veterans, I think Josh Uche or whatever is still available as well. So there are some options there. But as of now, I think you got to bring in a veteran that helps raise the floor. And even then, I don't think that guarantees that they're not going edge at four.
Agreed.
But I would agree that it gives them the option, right? Like, if they do want to go somewhere else, they could say, hey, if they want to go Jeremiah Love, if they go, hey, we've got Jermaine Johnson, Cameron Jordan, Jalen Harrell, Femi, and we're probably still going to draft one at 35. That could be a pretty decent edge room, right? It would force you out of having to take one at number four. I think they've still got to do something at edge, because if they don't, I'm sorry to break it to Graver. I think it just becomes increasingly likely that it's the plan at number four overall.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, as much as I want Jeremiah Love to be the obvious pick, I think that is true. Like, if they don't get a real player, for lack of a better phrase, to play this spot by the draft day, then, I mean, look, I do still think it's up in the air that they say there's a lot of edge depth in this class. We're not going to lock ourselves into one at 35, but we think there will be a good one there. And they take Jeremiah Love because they also could still use more offensive playmakers. They signed Wandale Robinson and a blocking tight end and a couple backup offensive linemen.
I love iron grids, so I don't mean to call you out, but I've seen this comment a couple times. How do we define making it work? Yeah, the defense was decent, but they could not rush the passer. They were one of the worst pass rushing teams in the NFL. They had some of the fewest sacks in the NFL, and they got blasted in the playoffs by the Seattle Seahawks. So, yeah, the overall defense was decent. I guess you could use that as a loophole, but they were terrible at rushing the passer. I don't think that qualifies as making it work. I want to be a far better pass rushing team than the San Francisco 49ers were a year ago. So for me, it's just not a good enough reason to neglect the edge position, which is essentially what they've done so far.
This is an interesting thought here from Bill Dance. Any chance we're in on Grenard, package Levis, and 101 for him? I don't know. I mean, it depends on what they do. It sounds like they're about to sign Kyler Murray at 4:01 p.m. Eastern today, but that's all speculation for now. So TBD. I mean, maybe they'd be interested in Levis. I don't think, I mean, they were asking for a day two pick. So is Levis plus 101 equivalent to a day two pick? I don't think so, but what do I know?
I don't think so either. I don't think this is enough to get Jonathan Grenard, but I'm a huge fan of the player. I would love to trade for him if that was, you know, the cost was reasonable. And I'd consider extending his contract. I know he's looking for a new deal. You spent a lot of cap this year, but he's probably going to play on the deal this year, and the extension wouldn't kick in until next year. So you'd have the room to do that if you wanted to, but I don't think 101 plus Levis gets it done. I think Minnesota probably wants more than that.
I agree. All right, we're going to take our last audio break here. Coming up on the other side of the break, anyone out there that we expect the Titans to go after still? There's one guy I have in mind. I'm curious what you think, Justin. And then we're going to answer. I've starred 7 questions in the chat. That's it. I thought I'd starred more. Well, we'll answer the chat questions when we come back from this last break. Welcome back, audio audience. The one guy I have my eye on, Justin, is not a secret. It's obvious. It's a guy that we've been talking about for a week. Bobby Okereke, still out there on the linebacker market. Most of the linebackers got scooped up yesterday. Caden Ellis, Leo Chenal, Quincy Williams, all the other guys that we've been connecting to the Titans. There is a second potential option out there.
Took the word out of my mouth.
Dre Greenlaw was cut by the Broncos, still available. Justin, Red Sox 8947 wants to know your thoughts on Dre Greenlaw.
obviously a great fit, right? Coaching staff knows him well. He had the injury a couple of years ago, so it really depends on what his physical condition is like. But it was an Achilles, right? Interesting to note, didn't scare Robert Saleh from going after Jermaine Johnson, right? So maybe it wouldn't scare him off Dre Greenlaw either. I think it's a no-brainer that they're going to do something at linebacker still. And I don't think they have to. It just feels like they're going to. And with those two guys available, Dre Greenlaw and Bobby Okereke, with such strong ties to the coaching staff, it feels like they're going to go get one of them, don't you think?
Yes, I do think so. Because just how much reporting there was around the Titans wanting an upgrade at linebacker, this fact that you can save money if you cut Cody Barton, and Cedric Gray fits well in this defense. Do they like James Williams? We don't really know. He's at least a good special teamer, which makes him a pretty good sixth or seventh round pick, one of the two. I do think they're going to add one of these two guys because they should. I mean, it'll make them a better defense. And I don't think at this point either of them has a huge market or else they would have been signed already. Like, what did Quincy Williams get? Wasn't his deal like 2 years, $8 million or something? Like, I would have done that in a heartbeat.
I don't think it was that low. I thought it was like $8 million per year, I thought, roughly.
Okay, I'm going to double check it while you talk about something else.
Yeah, I'm starting some questions right now because there are some.
Oh, yeah. 2 years, $17 million. I would have done that deal. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think Okereke and Greenlaw probably come in around a similar number. So I'm not – and I don't think Quincy Williams is a great player. I think he lost the starting job midway through the season with the Jets. So I think Okereke and Greenlaw are at least similar level players, if not better. And I think they come in at similar price tags. I don't think they're going to be very expensive at all. So I do think there's still opportunities. I look at, you know, depth safety. You know, a guy like Jason Pinnick or however it's pronounced, who's been with Coach Bob a lot. I think that's something they could still do. I think they need another D tackle, I mentioned. So I'd still watch for someone like Kalia Davis or maybe more of a two down nose tackle. Because even though Jordan Elliott, you know, can stop the run a little, I wouldn't mind. I know it's not really in Coach Bob's history, but a bigger bodied, you know, run stopper would make me feel a little better about the makeup of the room in general. But, you know, something else at wide receiver. Someone asked about Juwan Jennings. I don't think it's going to be anything that drastic after paying Robinson. So I don't think it'll be big there. But I look at sort of, I think depth safety, depth defensive tackle, potentially a bigger move at linebacker, and something on the interior offensive line. Those are the four that I'm still watching mainly.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. We can get to some other questions here in this chat. Any young edges worth giving a one-year deal available? Josh Uche is a guy that I wouldn't be upset about. Some other random guys that are like journeymen, like a Charles Omenihu, we talked about briefly yesterday. Like there's a list. There's, you know, I just had it up actually. Let me see if I can pull it up.
Josh Uche is a good one because he's like a designated pass rusher. He's a DPR. You're not going to play him on early downs, but Jermaine Johnson's an early down guy. And I thought, you know, Femi and Harrell looked all right against the run, and they're certainly built like guys who can stop the run. So maybe Uche comes in and as a DPR behind them. I still wouldn't feel great about the stage of that edge room if all they do is Uche, and I wouldn't take edge off the table at number four. But that's kind of how that would shape up.
Other guys with ties to Saleh, like Cleland Farrell, who was in San Fran last year. Yeter Gross-Matos was in San Fran with him. Jihad Ward, like I don't, it doesn't look like the Titans want him back, but if he doesn't have a market in a month and the Titans haven't signed anyone in a month, like he was the guy the Titans brought in, remember, like in August after the retirement of Lorenzo Carter. Nailed it.
Nailed it indeed. Certainly. If you want to get to some of the questions, I'd love to answer them as well. Yeah. If you want to put some up.
Let's roll through them. Here's the one from Iron Grids. Wonder what took so long for Bryce Oliver's tendering since they did Ravenel and Dellinger last week. Medical related, maybe. I would say almost certainly. If we remember, Oliver ended the year on injured reserve. So we don't know for sure, but I would assume it was a medical reason.
Yeah, probably medical, but nothing to really concern about. It's been done. He'll be a Titan in 2026.
Is Volson just a depth guy? Daryl Barnes asks.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Not the plan at right guard. I said this immediately when they signed him. I almost see him as a replacement for Blake Hance, who many of you probably forgot was even on this team last year. Another Bill Callahan flop, by the way. Like, Callahan was the one who wanted to bring him in. He was hurt a lot, backed up that guard. I think Volson is a backup guard. You need more than one, right? And the only one they have is Jackson Slater. I don't even think Volson's a lock to make the 53. I think he probably does make the 53, but he's your second backup guard, a la Blake Hance was last season.
Yes, absolutely agree with all of that. I do think, like, Drew Beatty was doing this, putting some highlights up there of Volson just, like, bulldozing people in the run game.
Where are all the – I saw that. No disrespect to Drew Beatty. Where are all the lowlights? He has been
a bad
starter for the Bengals.
Yes, severely low ratings. If you look at just, like, PFF grade and just, like, pressures allowed, penalties, like, all those metrics. I mean, yeah, you can pull a highlight reel from pretty much anybody if you only show the best plays. So,
like,
keep that in mind.
You could find highlights.
Yeah, so I do think, I mean, he's a guy who has started games in the past, so he's a good interior swing depth guy that can pretty much, you know, bounce around from either guard spot, maybe give you a little backup center option. But that's his role. He's not coming in for a starting job. They may do a fake competition where he competes for the starting job, depending on how they address right guard, whether or not they re-sign Zeitler or go get one of these vets that is more proven. Not more proven than Zeitler, but more proven than Volson. Then we'll see. But I do think he is a depth guy. This is a good thing. This is a good topic. I'm glad we got this comment from Mr. Too Tall 44, because tomorrow, for some reason, the Titans decided tomorrow was the day to do this. It's like, you know what? 2 weeks from now, we're all going to be like itching for content as we're about halfway between free agency and the draft. Would have been a perfect time. But no, tomorrow, while you and I and everyone who covers the team are in the middle of their busiest week of the, not just the offseason. This is the busiest NFL week of the year in terms of the amount of news, the avalanche that we get buried under. I think on Monday's Heed the Call, Dan Hansis, our host, said it best. He said, our 40th item on the news rundown today would lead the show if it happened 3 weeks from now. But it's buried at number 40.
I wrote my first article on Monday at 6 a.m. I wrote my last at 10:30 evening in the p.m. I was probably more tired than I've ever been in my life.
So anyway, if you are living under a rock or you just don't follow it that closely and you tuned in today for whatever reason, hit like, subscribe to the channel. The Titans are unveiling their rebrand tomorrow afternoon. What is it? 2 p.m. Central Time, I think? 2 or 3, something around. It's in the afternoon tomorrow. Yeah. And yes, as Mr. Too Tall points out with his comment, there will be no live stream of the uniform unveiling. It does seem odd to go from a block party to an exclusive event. It makes me wonder what we are getting. This could be like a sneak peek of the uniforms versus like the actual unveiling, because I do think the previous event, Block Party, was such a smashing success. Amy Adams Strunk headed that up. Why would she not want to recreate that kind of smashing success? It makes me question what this event is. All we had was a billboard with a date and a social media post with a date and an email to season ticket holders with a date. We do have insiders like PK and Easton quote-unquote confirming that this is the Titans rebrand unveiling. But I'm really interested to see what happens. I think you and I, Justin, will do our standard 10 a.m. free agency week live stream in the morning, and we may have to get back on at like 3 or 4 p.m. and react to whatever happens at this unveiling. But to answer the question, no, there won't be a live stream, but there will be plenty of Titans beat reporters there posting videos, tweeting updates, and covering the event in full, as well as the Titans social media team putting out plenty and plenty of content, both on their Titans social pages and on the YouTube account for the Titans. So I do think we'll see and hear plenty from this event, but no, no live stream.
Yeah, a little disappointing, but listen, I'm not... They're doing this for the season ticket holders. They offered them an opportunity to, you know, come see these things in person, get tickets for a limited seating event. Nice to have perks when you're a season ticket holder. Maybe I'm alone on that, but rewarding those people, I get it. It'll be all over social media. They're going to post photos, Twitter, Instagram. They're going to do the whole media plunge on this thing. So I can't wait to see them. I'm incredibly excited. Selfishly, I'm happy it's happening tomorrow because I just want to see them the sooner the better. We're still fans at heart, and I cannot wait to see them.
I agree. And I think it's going to be a really fun event. And I guess it's fine that it's happening now. I mean, I would prefer it in 2 weeks, not because I want to wait 2 more weeks to see it, but because we have you and I have plenty to talk about. Now, 2 weeks from now, you and I are just going to invent a topic for an episode, right? As opposed to like having a reaction style pod. But whatever. Too much complaining from the old cranky me. Here we go. Not Titans related, but would love to hear y'all's thoughts on the Crosby-Hendrickson debacle. You know, it's funny you bring this up. I'm not going to call you out, Justin, but I'm going to share what happened last night.
You could call me out. It's fine with me.
When this trade went down, so Justin and I are in a group chat with a bunch of the guys that started Broadway Sports Media and are, you know, Nashville media people now, Zach Lyons, Mike Herndon, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Other people who are less visible writing, but, you know, social media, like Robert Greenlaw, a bunch of guys, Chris Lawrence, who's probably potentially watching. Chris is in a lot of our streams. He might be here right now. Anyway, this news breaks, and pretty much all of us have the same reaction. The dirty rat birds pulling this shady move. Clearly, they saw Trey Hendrickson's market dropping before the trade became official. They said, we're going to do this because screw everyone else. We're going to do what we want to do. We're going to go get Trey Hendrickson for less money than we would have had to pay Max Crosby. We'll get our first round picks back, so we won't have to give those up. And I am convinced that that is what happened. I fully 100% believe that's what happened, because all the intel about Max Crosby's injury was out there. Rappaport's been reporting it. All the insiders have reported various levels of this, that he wasn't just a cleanup. It was a real meniscus repair, that he wouldn't be closer to returning to football activities until late in the summer. Like, all this stuff was out there. So for the Ravens to say that they got cold feet, let's be real. And they haven't said anything yet, by the way. There's been no word out of the Ravens officially yet. And into the chat, here comes Justin Mello saying, I don't know, guys, this happens. The Ravens felt that, you know, that they weren't comfortable with the medicals. I don't think this is shady. Defend yourself.
I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. Now, listen, you guys, because the argumentative nature of things, you guys made it seem like I was like going to bat for. I'm not saying that your theories were definitely not what happened. I'm just was trying to pose the alternative. Like, why is it crazy? This way I saw it. Like, you're investing a lot in someone. Okay. You're going to buy a car and you're spending a lot of money on a car. And then when you get an opportunity to assess that car, you find out maybe something's more wrong with that car than you initially thought there was going to be. And you've got an option to pull out of the deal and go get a different car. That just doesn't sound totally impossible. That's all I was saying. And then you guys, of course, last night, well, if they go sign Trey Hendrickson, it definitely proves that that's what happened. Why? They tried to trade for a huge edge. They were telling you, we really need a really good edge player, okay? So if they pull out of that deal, it doesn't automatically mean it's shady to me because they go get another edge. Like, you need a player. You thought you were going to get a player. You pull out the deal, you go get another player. Like, that to me doesn't sound totally impossible. That's all I was trying to say. I get the theory of the shadiness. I hate the Ravens. I'm even willing to concede. You're probably right. It probably was something shady. But again, like the theory, like again, if they go get Trey Hendrickson, this definitely proves it. I mean, why? Like, you need a really good player at a really important position, doesn't end up working out. So you go get another really good player at that same important position. I don't know. You guys are everyone's obviously on the bandwagon or the theory side of it, that the dirty rat birds. I have no problem calling them the dirty rat birds. It's, you know, again, probably your problem. Well, the other thing that confused me was, and I'm going to keep defending myself, one of your guys' main argument was like, well, Trey Hendrickson's price came down. I get that, and it did. They signed him for $28 million a year, though they went 4 years. Like, that's a lot of years to commit at his age and injury, right? But I was like, well, the price on Trey Hendrickson initially was very similar to Max Crosby, right? Like, if they initially thought Hendrickson was going to be just a little bit more expensive than Crosby, they were willing to give up 2 first-round picks to just – for a couple of million dollars in difference. That's another thought that popped in my mind for me to defend my take. You know, like, it's just, I don't know.
I think they thought Hendrickson would have a lot hotter market and that they would have to bid against other teams and it could potentially get into the $40+ million per year territory. Whereas with Crosby, you have to sacrifice those two first round picks this year at number 14 overall. You're the Ravens. You're assuming next year we're going to be picking in the late 20s because we're the Ravens. That's what we're going to do. So that's not that much capital to give up. And we secure this guy for sure. And then they're like, wait a second, Trey Hendrickson's market isn't, there aren't many bidders. We could jump in and win this.
Listen, paying him $28 million per year like they did, definitely better business than giving up two first round picks for Crosby. So very possible that they found that out and exploited a legal loophole to get out of the deal. That's the theories. I just thought the other side of it didn't sound, you know, totally impossible.
Yeah, I think both are possible, but... it's the dirty rap birds, Justin. We got to just, let's give them everything they deserve for being dirty and being shady and being disgusting, poor business. And all, every insider is reporting that every GM across the league is like, I don't know if we're going to do business with the Ravens again, which of course they will when the Ravens have something you need. Like that's not going to stick. But the fact that every GM in the league is basically like, that was shady as hell. Just maybe they're just upset, but
before you get to the next starred questions, I'll answer the last two real quick. Yes, Cuddle Ninja, we did talk about the insufficiently addressing the interior O-line. Go back and watch the episode when we ended.
That's what the title of the episode is about. The big mistake is that
our main second block topic was what you just said, so you'll really enjoy it. Brian, Crosby failed the physical. Yes, remember, the Ravens have their own team doctor conduct the physical. They get to decide whether he passes or fails. So conceivably, supporting Graver's theory, if they wanted to go get Hendrickson, it would be very easy to say he failed the physical because he did have off-season surgery on his meniscus. So their own team doctor has their own best interests at heart. Do you have any of the more starred questions, I believe?
I'm sorry, there are more starred questions. Here's what we're going to do. I have to run. I got to get ready for my day with Heed the Call. So you guys come back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Put these same questions in the chat. I like the question about if the Titans don't draft Love. Okay, I'll just show this one real quick because it's not a question. If the Titans don't draft Love, I'll do my research, of course, but I'm almost certain we can hold Graver legally responsible. We have two chat questions in here that are opposite. One that they have to go running back at 4, and one they have to go edge at 4. So it's interesting. Come back tomorrow, and I'll answer this one real quick from Atlas, too. Does Wes Wisley wisely actually exist, or is he shoved in a locker? It says he's a contributor for Broadway Sports, which doesn't exist anymore, and I'm half convinced he's the Terminator. We know Wes. Wes is a great... I should have mentioned Wes. He's in the group chat as well. Yes, I've had FaceTime calls with Wes, Zoom calls with Wes. Wes is a real person, and he does great work, and he's really active on Titans Facebook and helping educate a very less educated group of Titans fans over there. No offense if you're on Facebook.
Wes really is one of the best Titans fans around, one of the best people around on Twitter, Titans Twitter. Give him a follow if you don't. Titans Stats, if I'm remembering the handle off the top of my head. Find Wes on Twitter. He really is the best.
All right, last word to you. Anyway, come back tomorrow. Put those questions back in the chat, and we'll try to answer them tomorrow. Last word is to me.
I'll answer that one real quick. No running back at number 4. If it's not number 4, I wouldn't go one in the second round, but I really like the idea of one in the third round maybe. It's an option. Mike Washington, I'm a huge Mike Washington guy. Jadarian Price, Jonah Coleman, Damon Claiborne, some good mid-round running backs. None of them worth it number 35, but in the third round, those are some of the names I like. That'll do it for today's episode of the Music City Audible. We'll be live tomorrow, like we said, all week, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern. Come back, uniform talk, more free agency talk. We're going to have a great hangout sesh tomorrow. Until you join, y'all stay safe. And we'll go live again today if the Titans do something huge, big, not Tommy Townsend big, not Jordan Elliott big. It has to be big. Probably not going to happen. Come back tomorrow, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern. Yes, Graver.
Kevin Zeitler, Bobby Okereke, would that qualify for us to get back on here?
In my opinion, yes. If you are
free, I agree.
Yes. So if it's something like that, we will be back. If not, it'll be tomorrow morning, same time as today, 10 a.m. Central. Y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.